I can't always wear glasses, so my vision tends to fluctuate. I know my limitations. I always carry a magnifying glass with me, and I've got some really cutesy little traveling ones that fit into my handbag. All my friends just, we have to laugh at it because they're like, for a blind person, you do pretty well.
Reloved Radio, a podcast sharing inspirational stories about pre-loved fashion.
Hey, Real Lovers, welcome back to another episode of Reloved Radio. I'm your host, Chrissy Dunn, and today we have a super interesting guest joining us, someone with a unique vision and a passion for all things 80s fashion. Now, you know we're all about sustainable style and the stories behind our pre-loved treasures. Today's guest embodies that spirit. She's not just an 80s fashion curator and reseller, but also a remarkable individual who navigates the world of thrift stores, op shops, and vintage markets with a unique perspective. With a keen eye for authentic pieces and a commitment to sustainability, she's curated a collection that tells a story beyond fashion. You might know her from the journey she shares on Instagram under the handle An Insightful Haul. So, grab your favourite drink, settle in, and let's dive into the world of authentic 80s fashion with Rebecca Collins. Welcome to the show, Beck.
Who doesn't love the 80s? I feel like there's a lot of people out there that don't love the 80s, and I do get a little bit devastated sometimes that they don't have the same passion for the 80s as what I do, but I try and put it out there as much as I can.
Love that. Tell us how you got started as an 80s fashion reseller.
Interestingly, I didn't really grow up with loving op shops. I am a maximalist. I always have been. But I kind of got into it about 10, probably 8 to 10 years ago. A friend of mine said, I'm going to hormone school and I've just learned all about hormones and I think you should get on board. And I was like, well, what do you mean? I've got absolutely no idea what you're talking about. And it started with Alex Stewart, who she does Low Tox Life. She started as a podcast, but basically it was talking about how you live with a level of toxicity in your life. And my journey actually started with clean beauty. So I got onto Nourish Life and Irene Falconer and learning that story, which then went into like Sarah Wilson with I Quit Sugar. And then Claire Press with Wardrobe Crisis and learning about ethical fashion and being educated. And that was probably all through, a lot through COVID as well, that I re-listened to a lot of this. But that's kind of where it all started. And then I got into the whole secondhand shopping, I guess, from the ethical fashion movement. I hated going into op shops when I was growing up, but then realized the connectivity between going into the op shops and actually buying pre-loved clothes, because we just already had too many clothes in the world as it was. Becoming the eco warrior that I did, all of that was really impressed upon me, I suppose. And yeah, I just started going into op shops. Then I started finding little bits of treasure. I started adapting my style because I wasn't conforming to what everybody was wearing every single day, mass produced. I started looking at clothes in a completely different way, and I don't know why the 80s specifically called out to me, but, you know, I was born in the 70s, so I grew up in the 80s. So for me, it was all about Melanie Griffith's Working Girl, you know, hair and shoulder pads and listening to Laura Branigan and Olivia Newton-John Physical. We would do aerobics and wear those outfits, you know. So I guess that's where it kind of transformed. And I never looked back. I thought, wow, I'm so into this. And there's got to be a niche of people out there. So I started sourcing, I started buying it. And then I was wearing a lot of it myself and then just working through that style and then thinking, oh, this is great. Like, surely there's got to be more people that thinks that this is a good idea and like this kind of clothing. So then you start seeing people out in the street wearing bits and pieces and you're like, yeah, there they are. I can spot them.
And just to clarify for our listeners, when we're talking about 80s clothing, the pieces that you were starting to be attracted to, like, are we talking leg warmers and lycra or something else.
Hey, I've never stopped loving leg warmers, to be honest. I think for me, the biggest thing is probably shoulder pads, first and foremost. I'm lucky to say that because I'm quite tall and rather broad-shouldered, I feel like once I started wearing things again with shoulder pads, and I'm talking the bigger the better, I just found that my whole silhouette changed. I also really love massive earrings. I also wear very bright lipstick, always do. I can't wear a lot of eye makeup because of my eyes and what's going on with them. So I really don't wear a lot of eye makeup. So lipstick, not hair so much, but yeah, shoulder pads. I love a blazer and I love a coat. So I think...
kindred spirits.
Yeah, right? And then I started getting into dresses, which I've never been a dress wearer. And then I think it was also a combination of what I started to see through the op shops, what I deemed as treasures through the op shops, and also power suits, things like that, that I just started seeing in a whole different light that really just ignited this passion. And I was like, oh my God, like I feel like I'm so old school, but I'm okay with that, you know? So yeah, that's kind of where it happened. But yeah, the op shopping itself is a really big thing because I just actually can't go into a normal shop now. You can't find 80s in a normal shop. Oh, what I was going to say was also with 80s was going into the shops and finding it, but also finding the right people on Instagram. People get shown up to you all the time and you're like, oh my God, there are other people out there that are into this. So, you know, to coin the phrase, finding your tribe online and then just starting the conversations with people and seeing what they were sporting, whether they were reselling or whether they were just doing outfit of the day or whatever it was. You just go, oh, my God, yeah, that person loves that dress as much as I do.
Mm. So when you're out there, how do you find authentic 80s pieces for your collection?
I will take any opportunity to pretty much source from anywhere. It could be a tin shed for all I care. Garage sales, vintage shops, anywhere and everywhere that sells something that is pre-loved or secondhand.
Mm-hmm.
I actually love going in. I probably shouldn't say it is a bit of retail therapy, but yes, I do wholeheartedly believe in retail therapy. From personal experience and my own lived experience and family and friends, if we're all having a bit of a down moment, we kind of pick our socks up, or leg warmers and runners, and we'll be like, let's just put our gear on and run down to the local oppie and see what's going on down there. Because every day changes in an op shop, as the listeners and yourself would be aware. But, you know, some of these places, you could go daily, you could visit daily, and there's always something different. And there's always someone else in the store. There might be a new volunteer that you can have a chat to. But yeah, so I don't really look at it as sourcing per se. I would say it's the thrill of the find.
Oh, absolutely. I will say I've never found leg warmers.
Neither have I.
In any of the op shops. I'm disappointed now. Now that is what I'm going to be looking for.
It's going to be on our list, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to put it on the list.
Yeah.
As someone with low vision, is that what you would say? Yes.
Yeah.
How do you navigate the stores and the markets? Does it hold you back in any way?
Yeah, look, it's been tough. So I've had the condition since birth and I've had 3 corneal transplants. I was born with corneas that were shaped like footballs and yours would be shaped like basketballs. They got cut off and I've had 3 donors sewn on. They don't always work and I'll get to a point where I won't be able to do that anymore. I had my first transplant at 16, so I'm now 50. I just turned 50 last week. The procedure that I had done at that time is pretty much no longer. The older you get, the expiration on the corneal transplants is a lot quicker. So yes, it has been a journey up and down and I can't always wear glasses, so my vision tends to fluctuate. But I have to say, and all my friends just, we have to laugh at it because they're like, for a blind person, you do pretty well. So yes, it is difficult, but I think because I'm so used to, let's say, looking for things now, I know my limitations. It does depend on the store or the shop that I'm going into, how they set up the store. So some shops can be easier based purely on how they've oriented their stock. The more stock that they have, the more difficult it is, because I feel like there's just too much to see. I always carry a magnifying glass with me, and I've got some really cutesy little traveling ones that fit into my handbag. When I'm checking the garments, I check everything from head to toe. For me as a reseller, it has to be about quality assurance as well and quality control. So I won't pick up things like if there's missing threads or if there's sun fade or there's stains or there's rips. I won't always pick up those things. But, you know, when people go into an op shop, they might determine within 20 minutes, oh, yeah, this is it for me and I found something, or they haven't. Where for me, I take a little bit longer because I am so particular about what I curate anyway. I also take that extra time for the quality control element to it. I can usually tell by the vibe of the shop. I can tell by the color element to it. There's some op shops, like I'm pretty sure it's Binnie's, that color block. I do like a
they
color
do,
block.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, I like a color block element, but I don't like everything in one color. So for me, that's just a wash of colors. Like everything's in red, everything's in blue. I like, especially for 80s, you never really went with block color, right? So in the 80s, there's a lot of neon, there's a lot of print, there's a lot of animal print, polka dots, abstract, you know, patterns. Everything was polyester then. So going via a tactile element, like touch and feel, that's a huge element to what I do as well. I can literally run my fingers across the clothing and pick out instantly what feels good, what doesn't. Because I've gone through it so many times, I do feel like I can instantly pick up things and know whether they're going to be of quality. But to check them out, yeah, I will go from head to toe and look at all the detail that incorporates that item.
Do you have any tips for incorporating those amazing 80s pieces that you find into contemporary outfits?
Yeah, I think it probably should start with one item. So I think the easiest, and it may be a seasonal thing too, but I think, I guess, coat or jacket or blazer, not to say that, because that is my first and foremost, and it is the first rack that I will always go to. I will seek out a shop just to find that rack first and foremost. I think because coats, jackets and blazers, they might change a little bit in terms of the silhouette wearing them. But if you can get the really good quality ones that are wool or cashmere or that have a blend, they don't have to have shoulder pads. Obviously, I prefer them. But, you know, it depends on whether you like color. So, you know, you might buy a jade green coat. I found an emerald green coat for $6 in a Vinnie's, and it probably took me 2 hours to brush it down, steam it, do all of that, which, you know, we can get into a bit later. But for a $6 coat that turned out to be an absolute jewel in the closet, that was probably one of the first things that I was like, yeah, I'm actually going to insert more color. Because being a Melbourneite, Melbourne is grey. I've always had an element of color in my wardrobe, but being from Melbourne, it's always been black, neutral, grey, white, you know.
That is the Melbourne uniform.
It is a Melbourne uniform. Yeah, for true. So then inserting something like a cobalt blue, or a jade green, or a emerald green, or I don't know, canary yellow coat into the wardrobe. Also a blouse, a jumper and a scarf. They're my main elements. Blouse, you can, especially an 80s blouse with a pussy bow, like, yeah, I do really love a pussy bow and I have several. They're probably the key things I would put in straight away. And everybody can wear a jumper. So 80s was about oversized wind sheeters.
Knits with cats on them.
Oh, yeah. Can you see? Oh, my God. So
oh, no. Is that what you're wearing? No way.
Oh, my God. So this was my mum's from the 80s. Just a white wind sheeter. And it's got cats on the front. And then it's got their faces at the front and their bums on the back.
That was totally unplanned. I could not see what was on your jumper. So for everyone listening, Beck actually has a jumper over her shoulders.
Yeah.
Very on trend, but I couldn't see what it was. But when I think of 80s jumpers, I do think of knits with cats on them.
Yes. Yeah.
Or wind cheaters, yeah.
Yeah.
that 80s fashion is definitely making a comeback.
Yeah.
Why do you believe that it continues to appeal to today's fashion enthusiasts? What is it about it?
There's quite a few elements to that answer, I think. No one wants to be held back anymore. Everyone wants to express themselves in some way or another. And I think fashion is one of the main elements to do that. Not specifically 80s, but I don't know. 80s just seem to be like the total fun decade. 80s and 90s, you know, their clothing was just super fun. When I think back to the 60s and 70s, like I was born 74, and I wasn't in the 60s to, you know, but all of that fashion I see, we was nowhere near as vibrant or as exciting as the 80s, you know? And then Stranger Things, there's always that connection,
oh, yeah.
Stranger Things with the 80s. And that was a big thing when I did some work with the Garage Sale Trail campaign. And I think it was either last year or the year before they did. They took it back to the 80s. So I just thought that was hilarious. They made that connection. And I was like, oh, my God,
yes,
that's true.
It so is. I feel like I need to go back and watch it again now.
Yeah.
Just to look at what people are wearing.
Yeah.
When you're out there and finding these beautiful pieces, how are you ensuring, first of all, the authenticity? Because there's a lot of copycats that are coming out at the moment that are, you know,
horrendous.
Yeah, yes, yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And also the quality, because obviously the quality is going to be a completely different league to what's being out there now.
Yeah. Yeah, I always check the label, to be honest. I look at colour, I can look at an item and I can touch it, I can feel it, but the first thing I'll do is even holding onto the hanger before I've even touched the item, I will look at the label. And the labels are always indicative of the era. There's always the labels. Then there's the buttons. Then it's how they're sewn,
mm-hmm.
as in the garment itself, not the buttons. But buttons are a huge element because you just don't get buttons like that you would previously. So, yeah, the labels are really important and they always dictate to me how old they are. Buttons, 100%, all the accents on any garment. So whether that's a metallic thread through it, whether it is a certain pattern, you don't get patterns with today's clothing. They're all just prints. There's no real pattern to them. They're not taking into account a lot of historical patterns that were made back in the day. And in terms of longevity, like of keeping them too, I never keep them in plastic. A lot of people that resell buy stuff and then they put them in plastic. And I think they're already polyester, which can't be recycled, which is a fossil fuel, right? So at the end of the day, the polyester that we're wearing is a fossil fuel. It's an oil. We're already wearing that. We don't need to put plastic on plastic. So you just have to be mindful of washing them on a gentle cycle, spraying with vodka because that gets the smell out of it. And depending where it's come from, if there's moths that you need to keep at bay, you freeze it. So you freeze things for a couple of weeks and then pull them out. But yeah, just to get that musty smell away, I would spray everything with vodka and then I steam everything out because steaming at that heat and that level is also antibacterial.
Yeah, I can't live without my steamer.
Oh, I know. I actually find it very therapeutic. I would rather steam something than cook dinner. Anytime anyone says, oh, I need to have this ironed, I'd be like, yeah, I'll steam it for you. Don't worry. Give me 2 seconds. Yeah. So I think in terms of the quality and keeping the quality, so the authenticity is one thing. It's about looking at the labels and checking all those details and how it's tailored, how it's made, the fiber that they've used, but then keeping it and then making sure that you keep it as quality, never put in plastic. And a lot of my resellers will hate me for saying that, but never put in plastic. I hang everything up and I just have racks in my garage that I try to keep a very small inventory at any one time so I can kind of rotate it out there.
What's your selling platform of choice? So you say you don't keep too much stock on hand. So is it Instagram? Is it in-person markets? I know you do a few markets.
Yes, I love the markets. I love the in real life markets because it means I've got an opportunity to talk to people about the clothes and where they've come from. And even if it's not my story to tell, it's somebody's story to tell. So anything I source or anything that I obtain or find, I usually like to try and wear it myself, or I will fit it on my body so I know how it looks and what it looks like, and then I can talk to people about it. So yes, markets are key. I also find that with markets, you talk to a lot of the stall holders and you've got similar values and similar mindsets, and your neighbours in the stalls, they're a wealth of information, especially if you're selling vintage. And I don't know about every single vintage market that's out there. Somebody might know of a vintage market and my particular genre or my niche, which is 80s, they might go, oh, your stuff would really do really well at this store or at this place or whatever. So yeah, first and foremost, markets, just because they are a wealth of untapped knowledge and just the camaraderie of it, I think, the bonding and the camaraderie of it. I don't do a lot online anymore. As you know, like, we were both in the Poshmark game and that lasted for so long at a really good level and then it didn't. Etsy, same. They give you a lot of support to start with, but then it's all about making it on your own. But online platforms for me don't really cut it. It's also about having low vision, and I have to then spend time taking the photos, editing filters. I can't tell you from one filter to another filter. I've got absolutely no idea. So a lot of that that's at my fingertips is actually very difficult to manage. I also can't use my phone on the run. I don't have enough vision to allow me even just to do a text message or whatever. I don't drive either. So that's a really hard thing to maintain when you have to refresh your stock all the time. So I kind of pick places where I know I could probably get to by a train if I needed to. But usually I'll enlist in someone to drive me. So whether that's a cousin or a friend or whatever. And then I just kind of book them in and say, hey, I've got to go and refresh my stock at blah, blah, blah. And it's the same with the market. Like, I always have to have someone with me at the markets to be able to drive me and support me. But yeah, that's all. Yeah, that's kind of what I do.
Whatever works. It's always interesting to see what is working best for other people.
Yeah.
I know you touched on this very briefly when we were talking about authenticity. Labels. Are there any particular brands or labels from the 80s that you would recommend people look out for? What are your favourites?
There's way too many that I know of. And as soon as I see that label, I will pick it up. And it's like 9 out of 10 times I will buy it just because of the label. Some personal favourites are Beaujolais for mostly blouses because, well, they're a pussy bow. Or they've got a great colourway or a pattern. So instantly when I see them, they've got some quirkiness to them. They might have a really lovely button cuff. They might have a really nice shoulder pleat or a little puff sleeve or something like that. So I tend to go for Beaujolais as a blouse, A1, Polacco. They're really good. Anything that's A1 and Polacco, they're not in production anymore. Mr. K for evening wear, the old Jacqueline Eve is today's Jackie E. But the old school Jacqueline Eve, everything about Jacqueline Eve, it was the cut, it was the buttons, it was the pockets, it was the scalloping around the bottom of the blazer, it was the shoulder pads, the print, everything Jacqueline Eve. Katie's back in the day, Target, Jeff Bade was a really good brand, Anthea Crawford, Sports Girl, Delina. There's just so many. The original Sportscraft, like Sportscraft and Sports Girl. I remember getting my very first denim jacket in the 80s, Sports Girl. I still have it. It's in my wardrobe. But yeah, I don't wear it. I actually don't wear it. I think I've worn it half a dozen times. It's something I'll never be able to part with.
I remember getting my first Sports Girl t-shirt in the 90s, early 90s.
Yeah. And Esprit back in the day. And Miss Shop Meyer, I think I've got a couple of things Miss Shop Meyer still.
Do you work in a corporate environment?
Not anymore.
I wanted to know if you wear these beautiful pieces to work.
Oh, no. And God, it's so funny because I've always been known for my outfits. Like, everyone has always been like, what's Beck wearing today? Even in my corporate days, I used to be an events director and work in events and travel, and I was always a power suit wearer, but I never wore Q because I could never afford it. So it wasn't until that later on when I was on the disposable income that I started getting into Q or Veronica Main and kind of elevated that game. Even to this day, I mean, they're not as fast fashion as now, but as soon as they went offshore, for me, that was it. It was like, okay, well, they've almost become commercialized now. So I've been on the journey for, say, 10 years, but the actual style change has only been in the last 4 or 5 years. I actually stopped working just prior to lockdowns and everything because my vision was deteriorating and I couldn't retain the job that I had. I was managing a bunch of people and it was just progressively getting worse. So I had to kind of bite the bullet and go, all right, corporate's not for me anymore. And then it didn't matter because I went on a holiday for my birthday and came back and we were basically in lockdown. I was like, oh, I don't need to make any drastic changes right now. And then I just probably got really full on into it and just listened to everything, podcasts.
What else were we going to do while we're in lockdown?
Exactly. And then you'd be going down those rabbit holes through YouTube or Instagram or something like that. And then that was really what propelled me to really adapting my style and kind of clearing out my closet and thinking, why do I need 8 different black blazers? Or, you know, mind you, I did do a reel on that and I actually started explaining how sometimes you do need extra black blazers because they come in all different sizes and shapes and silhouettes and for different things. But yeah, through that whole period, like you just become mindful of what you've got.
Side note, have you seen What We Wore?
Yeah, with Celeste Barber.
Yes, that has a really good piece in there about Q, actually. Was it Q?
Yeah. It's a really, really interesting history about how they redefine themselves and develop their style. And, you know, people don't even know that they've got the sister companies of Dionne Lee and Veronica Main. And then they had Q in the city. They were their first to go offshore. Yep. And then get made in China. So you had Q as a mainstream and then you had Q in the city, which was made for the younger woman. Then you had Veronica Main, which was for the older woman. So then their styles changed. Well, it wasn't as much of a V-neck. It was a little bit higher. The skirt was a little bit lower than the knees. There were these subtle changes through their designing process on how it affected and how it changed with a woman's body. It's fascinating. I find any Australian brand, that's another thing with the 80s for me, it's Australian brands and made in Australia. And that's one of the key elements other than labels. So you'd still find it on not just a brand label, but on the actual, the care tags on it. If it gives you your measurements and then it also says made in Australia, it's a key piece.
It's a piece of gold.
Yeah, that's it.
I reckon we've got time for one more question.
Okay.
Have you noticed any particular 80s trends or styles that are making a comeback?
Yeah, well, shoulder pads are. I definitely think they are. They're not as out there as I would like, personally, but I can sport them myself with confidence, so I feel like I can take a hit for the team. That's fine. And shoulder pads, especially because it just changes the whole structure of an outfit. I think hair. So there's elements of big hair coming back.
Miley Cyrus.
Well, I was going to say, like, if anybody hasn't seen it, yes, the Miley Cyrus in her like Tina Turner look to the Grammys. That was everything for me. Mullets. I hate mullets. Detest. Never liked them back then, and I don't like them now. They are terrible. There's loaded makeup. 80s was very heavy on the color scheme of electric blue eyeshadow or bright red lips, and put that all together, bright red cheeks, bright red lips, electric blue eyeshadow, and heavy, heavy black eyeliner, you know? Just the rouging of cheeks is just like killer. When you see like Linda Evangelista in some pics or whatever, you just look at it and go, oh my goodness. But loaded makeup is still a thing. It's just a different way of applying it, I suppose. And I think what really has come back
as a resurgence is probably the colors.
So I feel like it's a good nod back to the 80s, like what we have now by those of us who keep pushing it. I mean, I get looks all the time because you can have 80s wear and 80s wear, right? But I'm very like quintessential 80s, the neon and the classic wear. Or I know people that do the 80s as well, but they're all about the sequins and the evening wear. So if you look at mine versus someone else's, it could be that the key differences might be sequins and mine's a lot of occasional wear and a lot of that corporate, because that was me as a person too. I lived through all of that. So yeah, there were different elements of the 80s, but there's just such a big nod back to it.
Yeah.
I can't really say why people do, but that's my opinion on why I think it is. I just want to get it out there. I want to push it. I want to just be like, come and buy all my shit. I want apes. I've got such good things. The stuff that you find is outrageous. And I'm like, it's key.
Yeah.
It's key. Like venting, that was something I didn't mention before. Venting is when an item has a slit in it. So if you're wearing a skirt or a blazer and you have that little slit at the back, you go to a shop now, you will not find venting on anything. And if you do, it's stitched together. No one knows that that's just holding the garment in place until you snip it. And then you let it open because it falls against your waistline or your butt or whatever it is to, you know, fit you better.
Yeah.
So many things like that are lost. Yeah.
I've done that. So awkward. I'm like, oh, excuse me while I just snip the back of my blazer.
Yeah, exactly. When I was listening to Claire Press and all of her stuff, you know, going into it, when I started doing it for myself, I would actually start looking up what's terminology for this, like embroidery versus applique versus scalloping versus, you know, venting or jacquard.
Yep.
Paisley. I didn't know paisley. I thought paisley was floral. I thought it was the same thing. No, it's not, everybody. It's not. And then working out the difference between a chevron print, houndstooth, dog's tooth, tweed, boiled wool. It's just, it's a quagmire of what's out there. But I love that whole process of learning about it.
It's an educational process for sure. Once you start up shopping, and not even just as a reseller, but just even when you're up shopping for yourself. It is educational. You learn a lot. And listening to podcasts, of course.
And listening to podcasts.
All right. So three really important things that I can take away from this conversation. Venting. I didn't know what that was. I need to buy more vodka. And I definitely need a bigger freezer. Thank you very much. Before you go, Beck, I would love to know, what is your best bargain brag? So something that you have found secondhand, whether it be an op shop, a market, a tin shed, wherever, that's your favorite or the most unusual or craziest. Tell us.
Look, I do like something that has more of an attachment of sorts that is from a descendant or as an heirloom. I find that resonates more with me than just obtaining it through an op shop or something like that. I probably have three things in my wardrobe that I will never get rid of, even if I never wear them. I have my mum's Perry Cotton. It was a cropped bolero kind of cropped jacket. The colour is like a goldy quilted kind of jacket with this beautiful metallic thread. That would be one key thing that I'll probably keep and I may or may not wear. The other one was from my great aunt and it was a tomato red wool coat from the 70s. The brand is Solo. That's another brand I did not mention, but one of my absolute faves. Anything from Solo is key because of the tailoring, the accents, the wool. It's just going to be a gorgeous piece. And then the other thing, funnily enough, was donated to me from one of our Poshmark friends. I don't know whether she would want to be named, so we will leave
we'll
it at that.
Anonymous, but she,
leave it as anonymous, but we had just been having this random discussion about Glomish, and I cannot believe that Glomish has not come up once on this whole podcast.
God, what have we been doing?
I know. We might have to go back and retape it all over again because I haven't even told you about my Glomish collection, my obsession with it, like absolute obsession. And we had this conversation and she said to me, I'm trying to sell a Glow Mesh purse in my closet. I was like, yeah. She goes, you know what? I'm not even going to sell it. I'm just going to gift it to you because it was my mum's. And her mum's still alive. And she said, it's my mum's. It was from the 1980s. I just don't have someone that I think would appreciate this as much as you would. I want to give this to you. And I said, I will take it. I will take her and I will treasure her. So she arrived in her original box with the original authenticity and everything. And I wrote her mum a card and I said, oh my God, she will be loved forever. And she's in my collection and she was one of my first pieces of the collection of my
clothes. Oh my God, that is such a beautiful story.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll pull her out. I pull it out and then I'll use it and I always know where it's come from. Those kind of pieces are more like, they're my sentimental keepsake pieces. I can thrift anything and you can always find a really good find. So it's something like that.
For anyone listening, you can just go to the highlights on the Reloved Radio Instagram and you'll be able to see those pieces there.
Perfect.
And that just about wraps it up for today. Thank you so much, Beck. You've been a pleasure to chat to. Can you tell everyone where they can find you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram and Facebook, but for the life of me, I don't even know how to use Facebook. So find me at Instagram at an insightful haul. Insightful was on my play of words for being a low vision person because I virtually had no sight, or I don't have any sight. But an insightful haul because all of my hauls are insightful and they're always curated. So you can be sure that you'll find some kind of unique piece. And whether I have it on my grid or not, if you're looking for something, you can always send me messages and I can kind of do some sourcing for you if you need. And just keep an eye on my stories because I'm always down at the set and op shop and finding pieces and putting them out there. No money comes to me for those. They go straight back to Epilepsy Foundation. I just like to be the in-betweener, the broker that can get it out there.
And for our listeners that are local to Ballarat, you're coming in March.
23rd of March, I'll be at the BWC op shop and vintage sale.
At Barclays Square.
Yeah, 10 to 1.
I'll be there.
Yeah, good. I'll find you some bits and pieces and go, this is what you need in your wardrobe.
Oh, I'll be there. I'll be all for it, believe me. Thanks for listening to Reloved Radio. You can find the show notes for today's episode on the website www.relovedradio.com.au. And that's also where you can download all my best sustainable shopping secrets. There's 45 of them, they're free, and they'll walk you through exactly how to shop secondhand like a pro.